Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast, the most exciting podcast you ever will listen to. I'm Matt Sainsbury. I'm the editor-in-chief of digitallydownloaded.net. And with me this week, we have Alan.
So the party never stops on this podcast. However, unless you have tech problems, then it does stop. And apparently that's what's happened today. So it's all good.
Yes. And we may or may not have Matt. He's having a little bit of trouble with his microphone, and fingers crossed he gets it fixed, because we sure do want to hear from him. Okay. So let's get going.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. That was our customary Hatsune Miku track to start the podcast off. That one was one of the older ones, actually. Key, really good track from Hatsune Miku Orchestra. Listen to it. Alan even likes that one. Well, maybe not.
I do? I wasn't aware of this.
Maybe not. He's been told he has to like Miku, so yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens when you work at Digitally Downloaded.
Yes, there is no option there.
It's part of the contract.
All right. So I guess you can probably all guess what we're going to talk about, at least to start with this podcast, the Nintendo Switch. Nintendo had its big showing to give us all the nitty-gritty about what the Switch will be. By the time you listen to this, a couple of days ago anyway. We're going to go through it in full in the next podcast, actually, because one of the team, Brad, has actually had some hands-on time, always having hands-on time with it as we do this podcast. But we thought we'd do at least a little bit of on it today as well, just talking about the presentation, our thoughts on it. It was interesting.
It was definitely a thing. I've been thinking of this for like the last good, I don't know, like 45 minutes. I've been thinking of a witty way to like have a sick burn on Nintendo, and all that I could think of was like the Nintendo Switched Off, and I'm really proud of it, so I'm gonna roll with it. I didn't really like it that much. I thought it looked a bit silly. I think it looks silly to begin with. I don't know what you think of the controllers, Matt, but I really dislike how they look. They look really uncomfortable and just not fun to hold.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the hardware itself, it looks interesting to me. I like that it's portable. I tend to think about it more as a replacement to the 3DS as opposed to the Wii U, and as a pure portable console. It certainly seems interesting to me. The controllers are probably uncomfortable. Like, I have fairly big hands and they cramp up pretty easily, even when I'm on like a PlayStation 4 controller. So yeah, I'm probably going to have some physical pain in playing this one. But you know, I'll sit through the pain if the games are good. And the games look okay. Yeah. Like, the thing that was really weird about this thing for me was, like, the console has games, but Nintendo did a really bad job of actually showing off that the console has games in its presentation, which was the thing that everybody was watching and looking forward to, kind of getting a feel for what they'll be playing on the Switch. And other than kind of Zelda and some really weird mini games from Nintendo itself, they didn't really show it off. But in once the presentation wrapped up and embargo on press releases lifted and the PR companies could start spamming my inbox with announcements about games that they have coming, and it really was like there was a lot of spam. There's a lot of stuff coming for the Switch, and a lot of it's really cool, like Disgaea 5,
like Skyrim.
Skyrim was part of the presentation, and it's neither here nor there, but. In terms of the actual Japanese developers especially, there is a lot of stuff coming for the Switch, and a lot of it's really quite interesting. And why Nintendo didn't take the opportunity of having that broadcast to show it off is a little bit weird to me. But, you know.
I feel like they're sort of banking on Zelda being a big enough hit that they don't really have to worry about anything else, which I'm honestly not too sure about, because I wasn't particularly impressed with the stuff I saw today. It looks fine, but I don't think that the combat doesn't look interesting enough to me to be worth playing the game, I guess. Like, the exploration looks all right and the whole movement system looks fine, but the way that you move while fighting people just looks really slow and clumsy to me. And I know that a lot of people, as we were having this discussion before the podcast, because I was raving about this and shouting and trying to be as literate as possible, basically, as far as I'm concerned, half of the fun of Zelda is the puzzles within combat, and I feel like they're missing out on the whole sort of precursor to Dark Souls thing that they've got going on with a lot of the earlier Zelda games. And I think that's a huge, huge missed opportunity for them because of the whole resurgence of what Dark Souls is. They could have really easily done like a sort of mix between like Bloodborne and Dark Souls and have that be the gameplay. Like that would have been awesome and I would have really enjoyed that. But I'm not sure that they've taken the right route at the moment with that.
Yeah, I mean, I never played a Zelda game for the combat, I must admit. What I play Zelda games for is more for, well, firstly, because they tend to have, you know, this art style aesthetic that I quite like. And then they often have what is probably an understated narrative to them, which I find quite interesting. Like if I look back to Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask or, you know, even way back on the Game Boy, Link's Awakening, the thing that I remember most about the Zelda games is that narrative, which is never too detailed, never too, that they don't spend, you know, that they don't have 3/4 of an hour cutscenes like, you know, certain other game directors like to throw into their games. But the story, for all its simplicity, seems to be always quite interesting. What kind of catches me about this Zelda Breath of the Wild is that it may just have like a really good narrative. It seems to have a much more focus on the narrative, which is really cool. I'm all for that if that's what they're going to do with it. My concern with it is whether the open world structure that they seem to be going with is going to work for the game or is going to work against it. The Zelda games have always been so good when they've been quite controlled about how the player experiences them. You go to this dungeon, you complete this puzzle, you complete this boss with the item that you've picked up in the dungeon, and then you kind of move on to the next dungeon. The open world structure isn't really going to work to that. So the actual gameplay and the actual experience is probably going to have to be different. And I'm not sure whether that's going to work for me. Wait and see. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's going to be the game that everyone gets with a Switch who buys it.
we'll be playing 1-2 Switch, of course.
Because other than Bomberman, that's probably the only game that's going to be out on the Switch.
Well, don't you want to milk a virtual cow, Matt? isn't that what you're paying $250 US dollars for, to milk a virtual cow?
Yeah. The less said about some of the other stuff that Nintendo's got to this coming to the Switch is the better. I mean, I had to laugh out loud when the 1-2 Switch game was shown off. Like that, as far as I can tell, that's meant to be like the Nintendo Land or Wii Sports for the Nintendo Switch. That's meant to be the one that introduces players to what the Switch does differently to other consoles and gets people used to how to play the Switch. But when you actually look at what 1-2 Switch seems to be offering, you can literally just point a finger at someone, kind of go pow, and that's the game. And you don't need to spend $469, which is what it is in Australia, on the Switch to actually have that experience.
So you're paying $450 to point a finger at someone. I think we can have like an exclusive on digitally uploaded now where we just point at each other and yell out bang.
That's a
really, really good idea. I reckon that's how we get views. Exclusive footage of 1-2 Switch. It's the same gif of like a finger going bang, like the finger emoji.
Yeah. Yeah, so great. I mean
10 out of 10 game.
That seems to be a bit of a misfire. To quickly run through the other games that Nintendo's got coming to the Switch, that seems to me to be a bit of a misfire. That's ARMS game, which it also announced, which is like this fighting game where you have these long, extendy arms, which seems to be like Punch-Out meets Splatoon's art style. Doesn't really work for me. Splatoon 2 is coming, and that should be cool. As I've said on Twitter, I don't really like the art style of those games. They seem like they're kind of 80s bad Sunday morning cartoon to me, which doesn't work. But Splatoon was a really good game. So having that on the Switch is cool. Bomberman, which is going to be really good, especially since one of the features of the Switch is that you can have 8 players play local multiplayer when out and about. So, you know, if you can get a gaming group together, Bomberman is probably the way to go about it. As I mentioned earlier, Disgaea 5 is coming within the launch window of the Switch, and that is probably going to be the most insane in-depth tactics RPG that you will play for quite a while. It certainly was when it came out on the PlayStation 4 a couple of years ago. And then, yeah, other than that, you've just got a lot of pretty old stuff like Skyrim or FIFA. I have to laugh. I have to mention this. Like the thing that I found really funny was that Nintendo actually, one of the few games or one of the few developers that Nintendo gave stage time to was EA. EA comes on stage to announce that they're creating a FIFA game for the Switch, which is cool on one level because FIFA is a major property and certainly will help sell the Switch. But the same month that the Switch comes out, Mass Effect, the new Mass Effect game, also comes out on every other platform but the Switch. And that's obviously going to be EA's big game for this year. So I think that kind of tells us exactly what EA thinks.
Could possibly go wrong.
Back. That was music from Wild Arms. Wild Arms is great. Nintendo, towards the end of the week, had its announcement about the Switch and so on. Microsoft had an announcement of sorts earlier in the week. Unlike the Nintendo one, it wasn't meant to be one that people were going to be happy about. You probably all know which one I'm talking about, but Scalebound has been canned. For people who haven't been following along with the Xbox One, Scalebound was basically the big Japanese game that Microsoft was invested in. It was being developed by Platinum Games and was looking pretty good. I mean, everybody who has played Platinum Games knows exactly what they're capable of. And this one in particular was being directed by the same guy that directed the original Bayonetta and what was that Wii U one?
Bayonetta 2 or Wonderful 101 or
Wonderful 101. Bayonetta 2 was a different director. Well. But yeah, Bayonetta and Wonderful 101 was the same director as was on Scalebound.
The notorious Hideki Kamiya, the greatest man I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, except for Yoko Taro.
He's pretty cool too.
But yeah, I mean it looked really good. We're all really looking forward to it.
Really
those of us who don't yet have Xbox Ones, we're probably looking forward to this one. As perhaps being the game that got us over the line with buying an Xbox One. Now it's not happening. And frankly, I don't see any reason to actually buy an Xbox One anymore.
No one either. So I want to point out that we live in a world where a game like Scalebound can get cancelled, yet we had a game come out on the PS4 the other day that I think everyone should see at some point. I'm forgetting the name, but it was a terrible, terrible indie game that came out. And I think it's so upsetting that we are not going to ever see what was essentially like a pretty high profile game from people who know what they're doing. Yeah, we can just see other things instead. And it's just, I don't know. It's really disappointing. As someone who loves Platinum Games and considers like Metal Gear Rising Revengeance to be one of the best games ever made alongside like Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2, it's really, really quite upsetting, you know, just knowing that they would have put all this work in and then having it cancelled. It's just, it's very sad. And it sort of brings us to the next point of topic where I don't know if there's anything else coming out this year on the Xbox that I actually care about. Because Halo Wars, that exists, I think. That's coming out this year, apparently. And then that other Rare game, the new like boat, not Wind Waker game from Rareware, looks all right, but it's also a not Wind Waker game, so I don't know. And then there's not much else I can think of. It's a bit bland and a bit barren at the moment, and I'm not sure if there's any reason to have purchased an Xbox One for their exclusives when you've got the PlayStation 4 just churning out constantly good games. Also, Persona 5 comes out on the PS4. I'm not paid to enjoy it, like to endorse the PS4. However, Persona 5 comes out on it. You don't know what that means. Everyone knows what that means.
I mean, one of the funny things, really funny things that I found was maybe a day after Scalebound was cancelled, Platinum Games and Sony released like a screenshot of Nioh 2, which is also being developed by Platinum Games. And it was something along the lines of, now that the dragons are done, time to get ready to fight machines or something, because Nioh 2 is PlayStation 4 exclusive. So, and it has not been cancelled.
It's so upsetting, but it's so good.
I think it's hilarious.
It is such a quality burn, but also I'm so sad that it still has to be this way. I think as well, the important thing to note about this whole situation is that there must have been something happening behind the scenes here, because there's also been rumors of issues within Crackdown 3's development, within differences between Xbox and the development studio making that one. And that doesn't really bode well for the Xbox as a whole, especially when they're immediately sort of trying to sort of, I guess, hide the fact that Scalebound was cancelled by just rattling off like five other games that are coming out this year exclusive to Xbox.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not sure they're doing the right thing, and that's really upsetting.
Yeah. I mean, I have a theory about what's happening with Microsoft. It's only a theory, so don't go and quote me as some kind of industry insider or anything, because it's only based on what I've observed with Microsoft over the years. I actually come from a business journalism background, so I had a lot to do with Microsoft's enterprise side through many years. The new CEO at Microsoft, I can't remember his name for the life of me right now, which is just embarrassing. But the new CEO of Microsoft comes from the enterprise side of things, and probably came in and clearly had very little interest in Microsoft's more consumer experiments, such as Xbox. And as successful as Xbox has been, it's important to remember that it was really an experiment on the Microsoft overall business. So my suspicion is that the Xbox One will be the last Microsoft console. There might be future Microsoft hardware releases, but I suspect they're going to be Windows branded, because Windows games for Windows clearly to me is what Microsoft wants to push out there as a competitor to Valve and Steam and so on and so forth. What exclusives
will also go horribly, horribly well.
Well, Microsoft is going to do what Microsoft wants to do, but any exclusives for Xbox will be moved to exclusives for Windows, games for Windows, which will mean they're also available on PC and so on and so forth. So my suspicion is that a lot of the stuff that's happening at Microsoft at the moment is to de-emphasize what's going on with Xbox to start preparing the business to focus entirely on that games platform. I suspect Scalebound is probably a casualty of that. And as unfortunate as that is, that's what you get, I guess, when you take 62 years to develop a game and don't release it. There is the chance that the company that's publishing it will shift their focus and decide that your game's not really in line with what they want to do anymore.
Yeah, and again, I'm just sad because it's no more Platinum Games, and more people should be playing Platinum Games, like 100%, because they're good. They're pretty good, except for like the one game that was released last year that I don't speak of and doesn't exist. It's my
Turtles.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really weird. That Turtles game was obviously done very quickly because it's the most, they had this. Because I mean, Turtles was based on the Bayonetta engine, which is like to Platinum Games is kind of like the Warriors engine for Koei Tecmo. They can just adapt it to like every license known to man. Platinum Games did a really good job with Transformers.
Yes, that game was awesome.
Yeah, really good job. That Bayonetta style Transformers game is brilliant, and I really recommend everyone play it. Turtles was probably developed in like a month.
That's giving it too much time. It's like, let's say like more about 3 days, and also they had a twist.
They put multiplayer in it in a week.
Just in a week.
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a very good game, but Platinum Games generally are quite good. And you know, if I can be a little bit positive, yeah, Scalebound might be cancelled by Microsoft, but there is the slightest chance that it's not completely dead. You never know. Microsoft might just sell on the license to probably not Sony, but maybe Nintendo. You never know.
Dragon Guard 4 by Platinum.
No, I don't know if that'll happen because that'll probably never happen. Microsoft probably sees Sony as a real competitor to what it wants to do. It probably doesn't see Nintendo as a competitor to what it wants to do. And Nintendo did save Bayonetta. Nintendo may just see potential for Scalebound on the Switch. You never know. I'm not saying that that's going to happen. That's not a prediction. That's not a guess. That's not anything. That's just kind of blind hope. But, you know, it'd be nice.
I really want a Dragon Guard 4 by Platinum now. I just went through Dragon Guard 1 a little bit because I've been playing it very legally, of course. I did own it at one point. Don't know where that's gone, though, so unfortunately I don't have any way of playing that. But I've been playing through it a little bit recently again, and oh god, that game plays terribly, but it's so cool. And I wish that they would do the same thing that they're doing for Nier for Dragon Guard, because they could do so much cool things with that. The entire world is so interesting. And they're already building on it for Nier, because I don't think this is really a spoiler at all, but Nier is a sequel to Dragon Guard 1's ending E, I believe.
That's right.
And they could work with that so easily. I know that Yoko Taro would be super, super keen to do that, because he's always very clear that he loves writing that stuff. Even if 3 was like not meant to be a Dragon Guard game for most of it, I think he would really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, to talk about Dragon Guard, because Dragon Guard's pretty cool and I like talking about it. I really liked Dragon Guard 3, but I can totally see where you're coming from, that it wasn't, you know, like Dragon Guard 1 and 2. I remember playing Dragon Guard 1 and finding it absolutely fascinating, like years and years and years and years and years ago, as a game that kind of mixed RPG elements with Dynasty Warriors. It had those kind of big battles where you'd be, you know, in the middle of combat with, you know, dozens of other enemies. It was obviously inhibited by the PlayStation 2's hardware. And I'd just love to see, you want to see Yoko Taro work with Platinum to make Dragon Guard 4. I'd love to see him move over to Koei Tecmo to take the Warriors engine and make Dragon Guard 4 using that. That would be amazing for me.
I would like Sony Santa Monica to work with him so they can make a God of War style game. I think that would be radical.
That would be pretty good too. Or here's another one. Now that we're talking about
the Dragon Guard podcast,
what if Yoko Taro went over to Grasshopper?
Ooh.
And worked with Goichi Suda on a Dragon Guard 4.
Thank you.
And welcome back. That was a track from Attila Shalley. The reason that we've thrown that in this week is because Attila Shalley is out this week on PlayStation Vita. If you happen to own a PlayStation Vita, celebrate. It's a new game to play. Go and buy it. Reward Koei for actually releasing a Vita game. And everyone's happy. Yay!
There's a game on the Vita. What an absolute novel concept.
Not just a game on the Vita, a really good game. If you like JRPGs, you'll really like Attila Shalley. So give it a go. Okay, so for the last section this week, there was an article on PC Gamer this week, which was talking about how games should have a reduced price at launch for reasons. And even after reading the article a dozen times, I still can't work out exactly what the reasons are. I wrote a response to that kind of piece, arguing that games should actually be more expensive, as unpopular as that opinion is. So I thought we'd just have a quick chat about that this week, because Alan, as always, probably has a different opinion to me. and that's why we love Alan.
It wouldn't be a digitally uploaded podcast if we didn't shout at each other for a little bit.
No, it's all good. It would be boring if we agreed on everything. So, Alan, what's your view?
So I'm a student at the moment, and I would like to consider gaming to be one of my main hobbies. And it can get rather expensive at some points. And especially during the deathly sort of September through November period of game releases, it became really hard for me to play pretty much anything. And while I do think that I do think that the current pricing of games is manageable, I think given the scope of most of these games, there's simply just not enough of a return for a lot of developers. And I think that's really unfortunate. So what I think should happen as a student is games should probably be reduced in scope and treated more as $60 products and not as, say, $120 products or whatever. Because a lot of these games tend to be very, very long. They're all competing for the exact same limelight, aka sort of the Titanfall, Call of Duty, Battlefield situation. And I think they should really either reduce in scope or increase in price, because it's not viable at all for developers to make any more money than, unless they're like, a massive mega hit like Battlefield 1 was. I do think that there needs to be some sort of question over that. As well as the return of the B-grade game, I would very much like the return of the B-grade game. Being a PS2 child, there was a lot of really, really good sort of cheaper, $30, $40 games that would come out for that console, and they would all be good. At least they would be good enough to justify the price. I would very much like the return of that. And I know that Matt's sitting here fuming, and I can hear him. I can hear him over the microphone just slowly, like that cartoon thing of steam rising. That.
Funnily enough, I actually agree with you.
What?
I know. It,
damn it.
We should save this podcast forever because it's probably the only time that it'll ever happen. Just come from it from kind of different points of view. I agree with you that games can be expensive, and because they are expensive, the expectation on them is that they have billions of hours worth of content. And I think the games industry would be better off if it scaled back the amount of content that it was providing in a game to instead allow players to play more of them, for one thing, thus giving those of us who have the money or time to invest in them the chance to do so. Because I know that one of my problems, given that I get a lot of game copies in for review so I don't have to buy them all, is I just don't have the time to play all of them. And that's because rather than a 6 or 10 hour game, as was the kind of standard back on the PlayStation 1 and 2, now games are kind of expected to be 30, 40 hours worth of content at least, let alone RPGs, which, people get upset about if they're less than 50 hours worth of content. So for me, that's one issue. And I think that needs to be resolved. The other issue is that there is that lack of the mid-tier. The reason I suspect the mid-tier is gone is because a lot of those kind of developers have moved down into free-to-play space. or very heavily subsidized by microtransactions games being sold for like, you know, 99 cents or $2 or whatever. And the DLC, the advent of DLC meant that developers are constantly throwing games onto Humble Bundle just to get them into people's hands. So they have a chance to then go and buy the DLC packages afterwards. I don't like that. I don't think anybody really likes DLC and microtransactions. And for me, the reason that they exist is because the developers are not getting enough money from the actual base product sale. And that's because people are waiting for the games to go on sale, which they do within weeks of being launched now. And people are waiting, you know, for games to go on sale even further on Humble Bundle and whatever, which I think is just the most terrible thing, because all of a sudden people's perception of what a game's worth is about, you know, 20 cents. And it's just not worth that. It's worth a lot more.
Yeah, no, like, this is really strange because I agree with you as well, and that's very, very upsetting to me. This is really weird. So I would also sort of consider the DLC wave more of a sort of evolution, but as a negative way from the expansion pack, because in sort of in the old days, here's my little Kane moment, you'd buy a game and it would be worth $60 or whatever, and it would, you know, make enough money to, you know, make an expansion pack, which would then go on and be profitable on its own. Now with the advent of DLC and very, very easily sort of, I guess, candy transactions, as I call them, because you can just consume them immediately and they're useless most of the time and don't really do anything for you. The things like the loot boxes in Overwatch or the crates in CSGO, like, that's the next evolution, because that's the way most people are going to be making money off these sorts of games. And I think it's really, really interesting because it's sort of a product of this cycle of just constant discounting. And I don't think it's a good way for things to be going, because I prefer to, you know, have just everything that I want in a game to be in a game and, you know, pay a bit more for it, or, you know, have it be reduced in scope a little bit, which is, again, why I think Overwatch was so good, because it simply just said, we're not going to do a single player campaign yet. There's no point. Game is designed around multiplayer. Let's stick with just multiplayer. Let's release it for $40 on PC and $60 on console. That's great. Really like that. I think that's a really, really smart move of them, simply because it means that the game is less likely to be feeling like a diluted product.
And yet you have a lot of people that complain about the loot crates in Overwatch, which is...
Yeah.
The thing is, with those kinds of really big production games, and we're talking about the AAA space here, the likes of Overwatch and FIFA and Call of Duty and all of those games, Grand Theft Auto, the actual price that you're paying for the game up front, when you go into a shop, even when you buy it at full retail price on the day it comes out, so you go in Australia, you go into a shop and buy FIFA for $99.95 on launch date, that $99.95 doesn't actually make enough money for EA and the developer to justify the cost that they put into the development of the game. Where they make the money is by people then going into the Ultimate Team and spending a lot of money on the booster packs. And the same will be it's the same case with Overwatch. People buying the game, even on day one, would not have been giving enough money back to Blizzard to justify the ongoing development of Overwatch. Where they get the money from is then people paying money for the loot crates. And I totally appreciate that people might not like that way, that monetization model, because it can be very expensive and people can get sucked into spending an awful lot of money on it. But if we were to get rid of that, the price of games would have to increase at least another 25, 30, 40% before they can be even worth spending any time developing by the developers. And it's as simple as that. People, I don't think, quite appreciate just how much it costs to create a game. And while you're spending good quality money and it can be a very expensive hobby, it is also a very expensive industry to produce games in. And it doesn't have the same monetization models that, say, film does. With film, they get five or six different shots at the same at money from a single film. You buy a film, they create a film, and then you've got cinema, you've got airplanes, you've got television rights, you've got DVD sales, you've got iTunes and all that kind of stuff. When you create a game, you get one shot at selling the game. It needs to be a very different monetization model. And I don't think that game developers are making enough money upfront from their games. And that's why we have these horrible DLC and microtransactions. Simple as that.